From Italy to Spain. For the last couple of weeks, we've brought you a Maths Olympiad diary presented by Jeff Smith, one of the judges. Here's the final part of his torrid tale.
It is the day of the opening ceremony of the 49th International Mathematical Olympiad in Spain. The event is to be held in a circus. The jury piles into buses and we set off for Madrid. The jury is kept in quarantine, but I am able to exchange deranged waving with the rest of the United Kingdom delegation. Tom has his understated look and wears both a Panama hat and a Union flag. The parade of the nations is short, and the officials and politicians are also admirably restrained. Then the circus entertainment began. It had several good acts. A lady with thunder thighs lays with her legs in the air, using her feet to spin and juggle with an axle which has flaming wheels on its ends. Then there is some acrobatic totty, which dangles from a great height by feet tangled in net curtains. To finish off, a bunch of male strippers gets halfway through their act before morphing into a strong man. Then they stand on one another a lot, and finish by making a human tower out of the transitive closure of the one-armed handstand. The blokes present are confronted with a rather stark demonstration of their own physical limitations. We'd better stick to mathematics, then. On July 15th, we complete the business of translating the examination papers into the languages of the world. The Israeli paper is perhaps the most strange, with the Hebrew running from right to left, but the mathematics running from left to right. July 16th. On the first morning of the exam, the Spanish organizers demonstrate their fancy internet software for handling the candidates' queries. All information is projected for the jury to see and consider. There are just 7 questions of clarification from the students, and the system worked a treat. Most of the jury go off on a tour, and I repair to my executive suite for a sequence of baths and siestas. In the evening, the students' scripts arrive. I am not happy, because 2 of my team have thrown away marks on problem 1 by carelessness. Another student has made a slip on problem 3, which means he will get only part marks, but he has all the ideas for a full solution. I remind myself that since I don't have to try to solve these problems under time pressure, it is not fair to criticize those who do. July 17th. On the second morning of the exams, the jury gathers once again to field the students' questions. It quickly becomes apparent that the quiet times are over. We are deluged with queries. The software and jury protocols which worked so well on day 1 were now overwhelmed, and it takes hours to clear the backlog of questions. The jury checks out from its luxurious premises and moves to a Madrid hotel. I meet the UK deputy, Kerry Fiddes, and our observer, Vesna Cadelberg, and that evening we mark the UK scripts very carefully. We now enter the coordination phase, when each nation's leaders meet up with local experts to agree the marks for the students on each script. Every question has a panel of 12 coordinators who are expert on that problem. They are the cops. It may seem strange that leaders mark their own students' scripts and then have to justify the marks. The reason is that all countries must be treated the same, and finding expert-neutral markers to grade work in Armenian, Uzbek, Azeri, Tajik or Korean at speed can be difficult. The coordinators have studied photocopies of all the 550 or so students' solutions. The UK leadership divides up responsibilities. I take the geometry problems. Kerry and Vesna have the rest. There is a question about switching large numbers of lights on and off. Kerry is definitely the lady with the lamps because of her Champollion-esque abilities to decipher combinatorial arguments written in the style of Finnegan's Wake, the preferred medium of British students. Vesna has some uncontroversial work to do. My geometry is all straightforward, except that I will get into a row with the coordinators of problem 6, of which more later. I am scheduled to coordinate the relatively easy geometry question, problem 1, on the second day of this phase. But the coordinator from our problem 1 table approaches me a day early. She asks if we are ready to deal with problem 1 now. Sidestepping the usual delicate negotiations, I reply, 777755. She nods. That's the way to do business. The fiendish geometry problem 6 presents more difficulties. 4 UK students have helpfully handed in worthless scripts, but Peter Leach gets a grudging mark for giving a correct geometrical characterization of a key point in the diagram. though he uses an interrogative form of delivery designed to provoke suspicion in coordinators. Instead of saying X is true, he writes, following the style of our trainer Kevin Buzzard, "Can X be true? Wow! Yes! I think it is true! Incredible! This is amazing!" The script of our sixth student, Tom Lovering, is frustrating. He has spotted how to do the problem. However, because he spent so long on problem 5, it turns out that he has only addressed problem 6 for a few moments. He has quickly scribbled down in one sentence a correct method to solve the problem, describing a couple of homotheties, or enlargements, which, if deployed correctly, tell you everything. Of course, he has not had time to write out a proper solution, but he has presented a kit for solving the problem. It will eventually earn 0 out of 7 after appeal to the chief coordinator and several meetings. They will not budge. Expletive deleted. At this point, we burn the loser's scripts to make the powder to be placed in the Peter Taylor urn, the trophy of the mathematics ashes. It turns out that by some statistical fluke, Australia have won, so British scripts will be carbonised. However, the agreement did not stipulate that nothing else could be burned and placed in the urn. In the spirit of my great hero, Douglas Jardine, the United Kingdom discreetly arranges that Australian mathematics scripts are also burned, and so become part of the grey residue which will inspire generations to come. Peter Taylor will only find out about this when this broadcast goes out. The final IMO jury meeting confirms the scores, and we see the rankings. The UK students have 4 silver medals and 2 bronzes. This is a rather good haul, but unfortunately Australia have 5 silver medals and a bronze. The UK has 133 marks and is ranked 23rd, but Australia has 140 marks and is ranked 19th, and is first in the Commonwealth. The closing ceremony is held in university buildings outside Madrid. Just as the gongs were handed out by the Princess Royal in the UK and by the Crown Prince in Japan, we have their Royal Highnesses, the Prince and Princess of Asturias. The Prince's English accent puts mine to shame. The future of the International Mathematical Olympiad looks rosy. The next few will be in Germany, Kazakhstan, the Netherlands and Argentina. A very successful IMO was held in Canberra in 1988. We're long overdue for a return visit to Australia. I understand Cairns is nice.
Jeff Smith from the University of Bath. His book, A Mathematical Olympiad Primer, is available on the internet from the Australian Mathematics Trust, and you'll find a link on the ABC Science Show website. And yes, I don't believe Cairns has hosted a test match between Australia and England before. You may be lucky.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.